Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to Propaganda. It's brought to you by Levi Solicitors. There's 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/ The Square Ball. 15% the offer. Time running out on this one. 15% off your legal fees of conveyancing instructions until the end of January 2022. Details on the website. So Propaganda is the show where we find out what's been said about Leeds United in the wake of the most recent game. So it's Newcastle today. Hooray. Dan, Michael and Moscow. And if you are watching this on video, obviously it's on YouTube as well as the audio version, you'll observe that we are doing this distantly today. So here is the studio with me, all lonely.
How is it? Are you sad? Does it feel nicer?
Feels cleaner. Yeah. I feel less oppressed.
Good to get the stink out, I suppose.
Right then. Yeah, we're doing it remotely today just as a COVID precaution. And we don't want to be transmitting diseases to one another. But we're all clean, aren't we, as far as we know? Anyway, into the show. And part one of the show is where we find out what Leeds fans have been saying about Leeds United. We'll do the Newcastle fans in the second half. What was the fan reaction to that shambles at Elland Road then on Saturday?
We'll start with Craig Robertson, because he said nice things. He said, we didn't get anything wrong. Balanced and pragmatic, listen, help calm me down.
We should say that's us, not Leeds United.
But Leeds United got loads wrong. Well, we did. We did and we didn't, depending on which bit of feedback you're looking at, I suppose. A fair number of people pointing out that we were actually quite good in the first half, just missing a strike.
So it's all fine then. We don't need to worry. Nobody needs to be sad about that at the weekend. I think the reaction of sadness, it's fairly typical in the wake of a Leeds defeat, isn't it? But it's never quite as bad as we fear. And when things are good, it's never quite as good as we enjoy, I guess.
See, I've been really, really very miserable about this. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I've been having to watch Newcastle fans trying to find something that's not smug that they've been saying. But yeah, it's really annoyed me. I felt like it was all set up for us to have a really nice, trouble-free break. We didn't have to really stress about transfers. The table was looking good. We were pretty much safe. Whereas as it is, we're just not quite there, are we?
But if you went back to January the 1st and thought, right, three games, Burnley, West Ham, Newcastle, we get 6 points from 9. We increase the gap from the relegation places from 5 points to 7. It's actually gone to plan from that point of view. The only thing is we beat West Ham and we lost to Newcastle when we expected it to be the other way round. With hindsight, realising how dumb we can be as Leeds fans sometimes. Of course, it was obvious that we would actually beat West Ham and lose to Newcastle, partly because that's Leeds and it's what we do, but then also kind of the play styles that Newcastle were going to be the ones with 9 outfield defenders and West Ham would be the ones who'd leave the space. So if you rewound a month and said this is what you'll get out of January in terms of points and distance to relegation, this is kind of what we were hoping for. So it's not actually that terrible. It's just ending the month on a defeat to that shower of nonsense is it sucks.
And I've had people having a go at me here in the feedback for being what I described as philosophical in the wake of this. But it's funny, I got angrier on Sunday about this than I did on Saturday. I think maybe my reaction to it was just a little bit delayed. But I feel quite philosophical about it in that way that you just described, Moscow. It's like, it's one of those Leeds-y things to do, isn't it? Is that to beat West Ham, get expectations up and just not be able to find the back of the net against Newcastle is so typically Leeds. And I think as a symptom of what happens with Bielsa's football is every now and then you just get these games where you absolutely muller the opposition for ages, don't score, and then get bitten on the arse in the second half. It just does happen sometimes, doesn't it? And I think overall the direction of travel is fine, it's good, we'll be okay this season, but stuff like that's not fun. But I mean, I'm trying not to let it drag me down too much.
To reassure Michael about the difference winning would have made, we still wouldn't have been safe.
Ah, but we'd have been nearly safe.
Nah. 3 points and then we lose the next game and Newcastle go on a run. We're still it goes to the end of the season like this. So almost being safe could have lulled us into a false sense of security. I'm not sure I could have been able to handle you going into February being all like, ah, yeah, Leeds are staying up, season's over, everything's fine. That would have possibly been even worse than feeling like we're still at risk.
Whereas that would be your stance, even if we were 6 points adrift with the game to go, you'd be like, we're going to be fine. We're going to stay up. There's nothing to be concerned about here.
Well, you know, I've always said we've still got quite a lot of games to lose this season. So that's something to look forward to. And I think, I think there would have been some danger inherent in assuming that beating Newcastle would have made the rest of the season a breeze. Still just going to be the same.
If going back to the, this happens sometimes, a few people, Boney M, Philip, West Ham, Ralph, all kind of likening this to the Championship days where these games would occasionally happen, that we'd play well and we'd sort of lose our way and just not be able to score. It reminded me really of every game we played against Gary Monk team in the Championship. Mm. They came to time waste from the first minute, and once we got past an initial spell of running out of ideas, it just felt like the game got away from us.
It's a bit of a Bielsa thing as well. I put it in my match report about, you know, he always calls the 2002 World Cup with Argentina that he owns the greatest failure in the history of the Argentina national team. And that was because they needed to beat Sweden in the third group game to qualify for the knockout stages. And they went a goal behind on the hour. And it was exactly the same thing. They had, you know, well, it's not exactly the same thing because they had Ariel Ortega and Gabriel Batistuta, whereas we had Tyler Roberts and Dan James. But they couldn't score. And throwing absolutely everything at it, they've got an equaliser in the 88th minute, but it didn't get them through. And it's one of the hitches with Bielsa's football is that if you go ultra-defensive and even the best players then have a problem unlocking that kind of tight defensive play, which is why teams do it. And it doesn't mean that Bielsa's, you know, found out, and it's not something that we can never overcome because we won a lot of those games in the Championship, but it increases the chances that we'll get mugged.
It's just dead annoying, isn't it? Around the philosophical question of, are we safe? Yorkie Dave says, do we all feel like we could still go down after that? So flat after convincing myself that Newcastle are just as bad as Watford. I think they are. I think they are a bad side, but we just leads it in, didn't we? We just couldn't finish. Tyrone's Minge, the interesting name there. It's all relative, boys, and points out, yeah, we didn't expect anything from West Ham and we should have beaten Newcastle. It's just arse about face, the Leeds way. Still on course for a 13th place finish, which sounds about right, doesn't it? As long as we don't completely collapse now for the final part of the season.
I mean, Brentford and Everton are both crap now, aren't they? So that's some other teams that we can fairly realistically look to catch, I think. I guess my opinion hasn't changed all season. Well, I think early on I was maybe a bit more optimistic, but I think once we got a grip of this season, I thought we'll probably just about be all right. It just won't be a huge amount of fun getting there necessarily. And weeks like this just kind of confirm that.
We still can go limping up the way to mid-table, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do. I think I said the other week, and I still feel like it, that the teams that are below us now will finish below us. I don't think any of them have got the capability of overtaking us. You know, they can sign all the Chris Woods that they want, they can bring in all the Roy Hodgsons that they like. There's nobody there that's got anything more to give than what they do. And I was saying it on Saturday, and I still feel like it, that if we can beat West Ham, Newcastle can't. But then it just comes down to why the F they can beat us, which isn't fair. But we are better than all those teams. Norwich against, was it Norwich against Watford on Friday night? It was almost unwatchable nonsense.
It was bad. Bad, wasn't it?
And Newcastle, I mean, I've seen some of the fan clips with them saying, you know, how brilliantly they played and, you know, performance it was. They were not good. They were not good against us. We ended up giving them a goal with lots of stupid ways. Otherwise, they were not a good team, and they won't be a good team. And I'm sure last points will win this season.
I think they are possibly getting themselves into they've managed to talk themselves into being in good form of Newcastle fans off the back of this one, just because they've scored it was a lucky goal. We should probably mention the goal. Melier saves that nearly always, and they don't win that game. And in the first half with the striker, we're probably a goal or two up at half time, and their problems are not over, I think, is the key to that. That they're kind of like, well, we're going into the break now. We've got this form. They did like a nice picture in the dressing room afterwards, didn't they? They were all like,
they've done it after both their wins this season. So they say so far to show for this season, They have two celebratory dressing room photos. It's absolutely pathetic.
Just on the team selection angle, I think there's a grain of truth in this. And this is what I was talking about and why I'm philosophical. It's like, we're basically all living in Bielsa's world here, aren't we? A willing hamstring donor is the name attached to this particular comment. And just saying, essentially the point is, why not square pegs in square holes rather than the movement of all the pieces and then taking off our only actual central midfielder when the midfield was already patchwork from the start? I think that's absolutely fair, is that? And, you know, like we said before, like Tyler Roberts is a lightning rod for all the criticism. Sometimes it's deserved, sometimes it's not. You know, he didn't exactly cover himself in glory in that goal. But then again, neither did Llorente, neither did Meslier. It would be nice to have some midfielders. It keeps coming back to that, doesn't it? About moving the pieces around, that maybe if you put Yelder in at left back, Dallas can play in midfield, you know, but then again, do you want to lose Rodrigo? I don't know. And this is it. We just got to kind of sit back and say, well, this is Bielsa. He's not above criticism. He's not above analysis. And it'll end up however it ends up.
There is a contribution to that on the back of having watched the under-23s last night against Blackburn. So we're recording Tuesday morning. They lost 4-0. Yelder started at left back for the under-23s and was awful for the first 20 minutes at least as part of a team performance that was terrible, but he literally could not put a foot right. And that's not to say he's a bad player or anything, because we've seen him play brilliantly in the Premier League. But it kind of, when you talk about the why you would rely on Stuart Dallas at left back instead of how old Yelder is, like 18, and he's played a couple of good games. And this is it, a couple of good games from a teenager, and we decide that they're the left back solution for evermore. It's not development at that age. It's not always a linear, just a straight upward line. And I think it's the same as to why Bielsa will bring on Tyler Roberts ahead of Gelhardt. He goes for the most experienced player who, in theory, is more reliable and more able to produce a regular sort of style of performance.
It's certainly regular. We know exactly what to expect.
But you do know what to expect. And I suppose to take off the kind of the edge on that, you don't know what to expect from Yelder, for example, at left back. He could have another great game. He could have a game like he had against Blackburn. And I think, whereas with Dallas at left back, you know what you're going to get from him. And you also know what you're going to get from Click and Rodrigo in midfield. It might not be perfect. It might not be everything that you want from your midfield, but you know what you're dealing with. And sometimes limiting the number of random elements, the risk chances is a sensible move. And then it doesn't work anyway.
It all feeds back into what I was saying, though, at the weekend on the Match Ball about, like, Angus Kinnear's programme notes, is that there's sort of a gap, isn't there? I bet in 5 years' time we'll be absolutely amazing, because all these players will have had the chance to stabilise, come through, and will have probably settled into first-team football. But at the minute, there's just sort of this lag, isn't there? There's this sort of latency between the first team and the sort of the ageing bunch of players that we've got that are the core players at the minute, and those coming in to backfill once they go. There's kind of, you've got Lewis Bate, who's how old is he? 19? Something like that. And then you've got Dallas and Click, who are north of 30, the pair of them. And there's kind of nobody really in between to fill that gap.
You're saying in 5 years' time, Tyler Roberts will be at his peak? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, he will be, won't he? He'll be about 28 years old or so. Yeah, he'll be in his... they'll be finessing at that point. But do you know what I mean? Like, it's about the transfer policy and why it almost seems ill-advised that Angus said that, when we're not really utilising the under-23s as first-team players for the reasons that Moscow identifies, in that they're not quite ready yet. That they're good, but you don't know quite what to expect from them. I think the only one that's maybe crossed that Rubicon now is Gelhardt, and the crowd is kind of sensing it and wants him to be brought on because they feel more like they know what they're going to get rather than that random under 23 factor.
He's a striker as well, is Gelhardt. That's the other thing, that we very clearly don't have one at the moment, and we've seen Gelhardt and we know he's good, and it's hard to get your head around why he doesn't get some more game time at the weekend. I can see why he didn't start, because Dan James was good against West Ham. He was good in this, apart from his finishing, and Gelhardt was of returning from an injury. But it was when he made that change, it did seem to, in much the same way as Gelhardt coming on in previous games has really lifted the crowd, him not coming on in this game, you could just sense it around the ground. No one booed or shouted anything, as far as I could gather. But people just went, oh, it's Tyler Roberts coming on, is it? Not Gelhardt. Right. okay, let's see. And then eventually when Gellhart came on, he did a couple of decent things, didn't he, Gellhart? But it felt like we completely, to use a Bielsa term, unbalanced the side by that point.
I definitely would have brought on Gellhart before Roberts, and it's what I was expecting. He'd actually been called back to the bench about 10 minutes before Roberts came on, and like on the hour mark. I thought, oh, great, Gellhart's coming on. And then it changed. But I think on Dan's actual point about the under-23s and the transfers and the backfilling and the ageing squad, we've not even finished the second season out of the Championship yet. So I think these things do take time. And the thing about where is Tyler Roberts going to be in 5 years, he'll be playing for somebody else, because we will have had the time and the resources to get a better player. Whereas what I was always saying in summer when he got his new contract was, that's probably a better option than trying to spend a lot of money on a better player right now. And it's funny, this is from my match report as well, but I've been thinking a bit for a while about transfers and things and general direction of travel. But when you look at clubs like Aston Villa, who were great, they're signing Coutinho and whatever, and Digne from Everton, none of that was their plan. Their plan in summer was, they had that brilliant strategy, and their chief exec came on, did that video where he sits in his crisp white shirt and he explains how they're spending the Grealish money, and they've identified these three players with careful data analysis, and they will fill everything that Grealish used to do, and we'll use that money. 2 months later, it's all gone to shit. Dean Smith's been sacked. They have to bring Steven Gerrard in. He can't do any better with the team that they've got. So now they get to January and they have to spend all this more money to try and rescue something from their season. Leeds, coming out of the Championship, said, right, we're going to have two seasons and we want to finish 17th in both. And that was the budget, that was the strategy, that was the plan. And at the moment, they're 4 months away from doing it. Whereas every other team around, if you think of how many, you know, Watford are now on to their third manager of the season. Spurs shat the bed after 2 months. Scum sacked Solskjaer. Norwich, who else? Villa are the big one. They're always going to mind. Everton just sacked Benitez, who was their big summer plan. Benitez, the trouble they went to get Benitez in, that's our strategy, that's our plan, that's the way. And then they get to January, they sell a player that he doesn't like and doesn't like him, and then sack him anyway. It's weird that Leeds are like the one club who've kind of gone, this is what we're setting out to do. We think this squad we've got will do it, and Bielsa will take them there. And they're quite close. And we probably think they're going to make it. And the panic is that all these other clubs are making big moves, and you get jealous and you start to worry that they're going to do something that we're not.
Well, the panic is about going down, isn't it? That's at the root of it, is that just the existential dread that we think we might go back down again, because there's so much at stake, and you take apart this side and the good things in it. It feels like so fragile. It's like a butterfly's wings at the minute, because if we do go down, then we have to sell off just about, well, everyone, don't we? I was just going to say, just on your manager changing point, every side beneath us, with the exception of Burnley, have changed their manager this season. Everton, Norwich, Newcastle, Watford, more than once. And in terms of above us, not that many apart from Villa, it's paid off for them in the sense that the
Scum and Spurs,
they're top half, yeah, and Spurs and those lot as well. Interesting, isn't it?
The point about aiming to finish 17th, I think weirdly, had we finished 17th last year, we'd probably be all right with this. It was just that we did so well last year and it was so much fun, and this season's a bit of a drag. But yeah, I mean, to go back to, I mean, everyone tries to do things in January, don't they? It's like when West Brom got Big Sam, I think that was before January, wasn't it? But they got Big Sam in, and then he made some signings in January. It's like, oh, he knows what he's doing. Does Big Sam, he'll get up the league. They ended up finishing on like 25 points or something stupid, didn't they? They were absolutely shit for the rest of the season. Nothing changed. And that's the thing, making changes at this stage, it can help, but mainly you will continue to be as bad as you always were.
And it's a weird situation. And I find it interesting where Leeds have got to, because it is, if you're walking into the offices at Elland Road every day and you've got your big strategy whiteboard on and the plan is 17th and keep increasing that gap as you've done over the last month from 5 to 7 points over where you're trying to finish, you're looking at it thinking, this is all going fine. We don't actually need to do anything. And, you know, the risk sometimes is like that. You pull an Allardyce, you change things, and they either don't get better or they get worse. But also the risk of not doing something is present because it's so close, because we're not getting up to ninth like we were last season. But it is, it's funny because actually getting so close to succeeding in what they've set out to do isn't reducing any of the pressure in the way that you think it might. And it's funny just to be in that position and wondering what they what they do now, because they've obviously, the thing, one of the things with Kinnear's notes is he's talking about like it signing players now restricts what they want to do in summer. And that's always been the thing, is that two seasons, finishing 17th, and then Radvitsani is then, well, then we start going for Europe. So there's got to be something planned for summer to justify that kind of talk and to make staying up two seasons worth it. The ground moves are all supposed to happen. Maybe the 49ers take over. Maybe there's we start going for a higher standard of player. That's all got to start for that. And yeah, what do you do now to make sure you get there? Then also doesn't, once you are there, I mean, I'm glad I'm not running leads.
It seems like a dreadful business, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're coming for so much flack, you really do. And on that point, let's talk about a higher level of player in the form of Rodrigo, who's our record signing. I couldn't pick apart his performance at the weekend. It baffled me. It was very, very enigmatic. At moments, brilliant, as I said, on the match ball. Other times, he did seem dead leggy and lethargic and behind the game. Why is he not up front? What's happened there that means he's not playing in the position that he was signed for? It's just, is this another Bielsa-ism?
It does seem frustrating, because I don't think he's a midfielder. I think we've seen enough of him there now that I don't generally like him in there, I have to say. I get the feeling Moscow will disagree, but it feels like whenever he starts in midfield, generally end up feeling like we need to take him off at some point. I'm not sure if the stats bear that out, but certainly in the early part of the season where he was starting there and Bamford was up front, and it felt like that was our strongest 11 that we were going with for about 2 weeks, we kept taking him off because it wasn't really working. And admittedly, there were some difficult games in there, but I don't know what he is the problem. I don't really know where he fits in. And while I don't think he's a bad player and don't really dislike him, just don't know what the point of him is a lot of the time.
Did you not like his beautiful passing from deep, sending it through to the toe of James almost, that Rafinha had to flick back for him, and the ones he was playing across the pitch to Rafinha himself?
He does do that stuff, but then it feels like we're just really porous through the middle, because Newcastle's midfield is shit as well. Let's face it, it's an ageing Shelvey, and it was Longstaff who played a lot of that game. It's a bad midfield, and for us not to be able to control that, I think is a bit concerning.
Their midfield didn't do anything for the first hour, though.
No, true.
And it was a feature of the first half. And one of the things I was thinking about was how miserable it must have been to be playing for Newcastle against us in the first half, because every time they tried to get over halfway, we just took the ball off them and attacked again. And I think Rodrigo did look tired in the second half. When I was talking about expecting Gelhardt to come on, I thought it was going to be for Rodrigo, because he looked like he'd started blowing. And with it being his only his second game back after his minutes were being managed the other week, but right, that's the change, get Gelhardt on for Rodrigo and move things about. But I have seen as many people after the game on Saturday saying he played well as saying he played badly.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think there's maybe an element of bringing a preconceived idea about him from both sides, that I don't think he's been as bad as people think. So I think he played quite well. A lot of people think he's garbage and not been worth the money, and they seem to be the ones who don't think he played well. It's kind of I don't think anybody's opinion really changed about Rodrigo in that game. Everybody saw what they usually see.
The money is an issue there, I think, because, you know, from a record signing, you do expect big things. And I know it's not an amount of money that is out of kilter with a good Premier League player these days. You know, there are many Premier League teams that have £30 million players on their bench permanently. And maybe our expectation of a £30 million player is still based slightly upon it being like the mid-2000s and us just having dropped out of the Premier League. I think if we paid like £6 million for him and he was playing like this, people would be fine with it. It's just that, there's just an anxiety around, have we chucked all our money away on this guy?
To put, I've got a few things on that. One is, I was reading, do you know Newcastle want Lingard on loan?
Oh, they're paying like £12 million to him on loan, aren't they, for 6 months?
For a loan fee. Yeah, so I don't know where you think we're going to get a Spanish international for £6 million
contract. I'm not suggesting we can buy a Spanish international, but I mean, like, if he'd have been a player that we'd picked up relatively cheaply, you know, if he was like another Click or someone who was playing like this, you'd be like, well, he's doing all right.
I mean, we didn't pay much for Roberts and people hate him, so I don't know if that would have worked out. But the other thing is, I spent some time looking at Aston Villa for whatever reason, trying to fathom what they're about. Buendia, £45 million, not done anything this season. They've had to buy Coutinho to now either replace him or, it looks like, play with him to try and get something out of him. And I think if you look at their signings since promotion, they came up the year before us and only stayed up because of a goal line camera being turned off or not picking up an obvious goal. Their squad is absolutely full of just garbage that they've signed who have, for just as much money, if not more, none of whom have lived up to it. And then the last one is that it's a team game and the targets that I was talking about before. If Rodrigo helps us get to 17th, fine. It's worked from a team perspective. He could have been more exciting along the way. He could have played better in all the matches, but there's kind of, I think about it sometimes when people go through that kind of parlor game of rating Victor Orta's signings as hits or misses. And I think, well, we got promoted. So all of that worked. And, you know, if you went through, I remember, and Dan remembers, 1990 and Howard Wilkinson's magnificent seven for promotion from Division Two, who were all lined up as these are the guys who are going to get promoted. And there was Mel Sterland and Vinnie Jones at one end. But then you had,
Chris O'Donnell, was he there?
Chris O'Donnell, Mickey Thomas, who was 36 if he was a day and played like three games and disappeared. John Hendry had the Helder Costa of his day, played one season, contributed a bit, got injured, was decent, but then got sold because Wilkinson didn't sign him. Jim Beglin, who was important in the run-in, but then retired through injury in the next season because he was playing with broken legs already. So, but it didn't matter because those players got Leeds into Division One. So the fact that a few of them were failures was not a problem, and Helder Costa falls into that category for promotion, that, you know, he wasn't brilliant, he wasn't exciting, but he got a couple of goals, he got a couple of assists, and he was in the team, and we went up. And from that point of view, Rodrigo seems to have a very good rep among the players. They all seem to think he's a fantastic professional. So maybe from those points of view as well, that somebody that they work with every day has got value in the Pablo Hernandez sense, that we would have liked to keep Berardi around for his off-the-field stuff. If he's providing some of that at Thorpe Arch, then good. But he doesn't thrill, and I don't think we've ever seen the best of him. But at the end of the day, 30 million isn't bad if it gets you to the next stage.
I also think that one of Rodrigo's biggest problems is Rafinha being so cheap and so good.
Yeah.
He's framed against that, isn't he? But there you go.
Yeah, it's every player you buy, he gets compared against others. And he has the added difficulty as well, as we have Stuart Dallas in the team, who we paid like virtually nothing for, and Pascal Strauch, who we paid virtually nothing for. And some of these players look absolutely brilliant, but you can't just go and pick someone up from Ajax's youth team and put him straight into the first team squad for 200 grand. You know, he's from years of development has become as good as this as Strauch. So I don't know if it weighs on him personally, but it weighs on our expectations of him, does the price tag.
I think the direct comparison for him is Pat Bamford at 7 million, who he was ostensibly to replace or be in competition with, but because he just turned himself into a 17-goal England international Premier League striker, we've never, until this season when Rodrigo was also injured most of the time as well, needed to play him as a number nine. So it's been about putting him in as a attacking midfielder and seeing how that works. And at the same time, the one thing that has always been missing from the strategy of what they've been trying to do is that attacking creative central midfielder, whether it was Mikkel Cuisance, whether it's Conor Gallagher, Lewis O'Brien, or now Brendan Aaronson. They've been trying to sign that player for the entire time since we've got promoted. So that's obviously the one part of what they were setting out to do that they haven't been able to do. And that might have changed things for Rodrigo. He may have sat on the bench and just watched Pat Bamford score all the goals if we got that player. I don't know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is part two of the show where we find out what the Newcastle fans made of it all. Michael, you've been delving through their fan channels. What have you found for us, you lucky sausage?
It's horrible. It's just horrible. It's trying to find anything. The problem is they don't, after a win, teams tend to talk about themselves, which is really boring for someone who doesn't support Newcastle. They just kind of twitter on about how, you know, individual left backs played or whatever. And you think, well, does anyone want to hear that?
There was a bit on Newcastle fans TV talking about our team. They were bigging up Dan James. Said he was excellent. So they did a bit on us, but then they got weird. One of them started saying that Chris Wood was his man of the match and played so well that he was getting emotional just thinking about it.
Right.
That's an interesting take.
Even the other people on the podcast with him were wondering if he was okay.
It's some of the takes are weird, I think, after a win. It's like on, we picked out Trippier as being not very good. And then I watched Match of the Day, and it was picked up on the feedback form, actually. It was Jelly pointed out on it, saying how Shearer had done a big thing about how brilliant Trippier was. And he just wasn't, was he?
No.
He improved in the second half, and I think it was telling that the clips that were shown on Match of the Day of him were all second half clips, because in the first half, Jack Harrison basically just went past him every time.
Yeah, Shearer did that, and Jelly is absolutely right. And there was even in the second half, I think it was Harrison was running away from him, and he was miles out. Like, there was no way Trippier could keep up. But then I'm interested whether, like, how influential Shearer's so-called analysis was, that a lot of comments on that video I was watching were all giving Trippier, they'd rated Trippier as a 7 out of 10 on the YouTube thing. And loads of people in the comments were like, oh no, he was 10 out of 10, he was amazing. And he wasn't. He was awful. I mean, he wasn't awful, but he wasn't good. And he was conspicuously getting beaten by Jackie often.
I think it shows that someone like Shearer saying someone's good has more influence than you saying Tyler Roberts is good every week. It's just not. It's just not swinging people in the same way. Do you know? I was thinking about Trippier. I knew there was some weird former memory I had of him. Do you remember? It was Eddie Howe's Burnley saved Simon Grayson's job. I looked back on it, Jan 2012. Trippier was sent off after half an hour for two yellows while playing for Burnley, and we won it with goals in the 88th and 95th minutes.
Ah. Was that Howson?
It was McCormack who got the late goal. The equaliser was a ridiculous comedy own goal from a corner. I think it was in at the near post, and it was one of those where the defender tries to clear it and it goes backwards into his own net. And then, into injury time, we managed to equalise. But we'd lost three on the bounce, and it was basically that Grayson was going to be sacked if we lost that one as well. So it wasn't even like three extra games before we eventually sacked him.
The Shearer on Trippier thing was so weird that I was thinking about it quite a lot. And it got to the point, his big ending of his piece was that he thinks Trippier should be future Newcastle United captain. Mm. And I was wondering at the end of that whether when he got off air, he just got his phone and sent him a text saying, got that in there for you, Kieran, that's all right. Because it was so strange to kind of pick him out of everything in the game. And then for that to be the conclusion, it made me think that that was maybe the point. His mate Kieran deserves the armband at the Magpies.
Who's their captain now?
Some no-mark, some producer, some terrible human rights mollifying pig.
I didn't watch Match of the Day. Absolutely refused. That got deleted straight from my planner when I got home on Saturday night, not having any of it. So I don't know what analysis they did. I assume it was wrong. Anyway, let's find out about the analysis of True Faith as well. So they were recording from some sort of industrial estate near Elland Road where they'd parked.
All the clips are found of people who actually went to the game. They all seem to be out on the outskirts somewhere. But yeah, this is a short but essentially fairly fair summary of the game.
And that just felt so good. Winning, bit of a shithouse win. Did we deserve it? Don't care. We can't be picky. We're not picky. Don't give a fuck. The performance wasn't vintage. Didn't have to be.
You see, I admire that honesty. That's all you need to say in the wake of a win like that, you know, rather than trying to tie yourself up in not saying they were brilliant. They weren't brilliant. They shithoused it, and they don't have to care because they won, in the same way that we don't have to care last week when we beat West Ham.
But we did that with style and grace, and should have won by, and should have won by at least two.
This guy can take over from Alan Shearer on Match of the Day. That would have been better. He just come on and say, we weren't lucky, don't give a fuck. Thanks, Alan. Danny Murphy, anything to add?
Right, go on then, what else have we got? We've
got Toon Review. This is them, well, the talk complaining about not having a penalty, actually, which may have been correct. We'll discuss that in a minute.
John says, sick of all the mourners saying that we were lucky. I couldn't give a shit. We won, simple as that. I've never seen anyone say that. And if they are, then they're absolute idiots. Look, you're going to need some luck. Leeds were lucky as well today, by the way. Let's not forget that. You know, they had their pieces of luck. It just swings both ways in a game. We haven't had a lot of luck this season, to be fair. With a lot of things, including VAR.
Yeah,
without a doubt, I was going to bring that up because when he first went down, I thought, "Oh, that's just a slip." Now on the replay, he gets tripped. He gets his foot stood on.
Definite contact,
and then he slips. So why hasn't VAR picked that up, Daniel?
Well, it was number one. It was Kevin, no friend, wasn't it? On VAR, nobody's friend. Do they take it from the referee's call and say? Actually, don't put it to VAR, I don't know, but it should have absolutely been to VAR, and it should have been absolutely a penalty. And then I was a little bit worried about Maxi after that, because I thought if he doesn't shut up, he's going to get another yellow and go, because he was going mad, wasn't he?
This is the problem with VAR. There's no accountability. We've said it loads. And the fact that I'm prepared to sit here and go, well, you know what? It went in our favour, so it's probably fine, and they were probably right. But it's bollocks, isn't it, the whole thing? Shut it down. Get rid of it. Get it in the bin. You said on the match ball, actually, didn't you, Moscow, because you'd had your little telly in the West Stand. There we go, little telly bell. You'd seen it, and you thought it might have been a penalty, whereas I saw it in the ground. No idea. Haven't watched any replays, so still no idea.
I was going to say, on the VAR accountability, I enjoyed how, on that podcast, Danielle seems to be being held accountable for it. Why wasn't that given? Where was VAR, Danielle? And respect to Kevin No Friend. That's very good. Kevin No Mates from now on.
Some nice low-level trash in there.
But yeah, it was a penalty.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
And I think there's the Match of the Day analysis. That was Danny Murphy's contribution to it as well. He just went, yeah, that's a penalty.
I think it was maybe not given because he'd spent a lot of time throwing himself on the ground and moaning about stuff at St. Maximin. And actually, he's the way he went down on this was incredibly dramatic as well, with his arms kind of flailing as he was admittedly fouled. It was one of those where there's not much in it, but he gets kicked. They are given as penalties pretty much always.
Yeah, it's like Robin Cox trying to slow down. And as he slows down, he slides and just takes St. Maximin's legs away. It's not like the one on Llorente. Some Newcastle fans I was listening to were quite angry about that one, Llorente on Manquillo, that led to the goal of like that being like he went right across him, arm, leg, everything to make sure he put him on the floor, even though, as some of the Newcastle fans were pointing out, they didn't think he was going to get to the ball as he'd put around him. But then the Cock one is a very different one, where it's kind of a just takes his ankles out. But yeah, I wonder if he played himself out of it. But then VAR is supposed to kind of take that factor out, isn't it? Where it's just remove the emotion of whether somebody's gone down too easy or played for it and just be, we can see what happened, that's a penalty.
I'm all for a little bit of Boy Who Cried Wolf style refereeing though, where they don't give stuff based on theatrics or previous theatrics. It's the way it should be refereed, as long as it doesn't affect us.
Yes, and just on Newcastle saying that they've not had any luck this season, getting that takeover approved was pretty lucky. So, you know, be careful about when we're weighing things up as to how this season go. Oh, we've had it so hard this season. Billions of dollars of petrol torture money flying at the club all because somebody at the FA just went, just do it. Just let them do it. It's fine. Don't want to deal with it anymore.
Also, if we're talking penalty decisions, it was still not as blatant as the Dan James one up there, which was at 1-0, wasn't it?
Yeah. So
and that's the important thing about this, is whataboutery, isn't it?
Well,
that's what football is built on these days.
That Manquillo was an interesting point because they don't seem to rate him very highly. And he came on for Dummett, who I certainly do not rate. And still, even though I've now heard of him, I refuse to accept that I've heard of him. I'm going to really work very hard to forget him and remove him from my brain and life. Bielsa was talking after the game about how he tried switching the wingers over and we still couldn't get... we kept going down the wrong side and couldn't get any better from that. And it's Manquillo who took the ball off Tyler Roberts, whether you want to say that's easy or not, and then charged forward, got the free kick off Llorente, and then they were talking about how he played very well defensively for the rest of the game. So there's kind of it's one of those things where, because we always hyper focus on Leeds and what Leeds should have done, but there was a player change in there for Newcastle that, from their point of view, they seem to think was significant. But there's another player, like, they can enjoy Manquillo in the Championship.
Right, then, on to the next clip. And are they replacing Chris Wood already? He's only played, what, two games?
Yes, I mean, we were just talking in the first part about how we're still not sure on Rodrigo and where he fits. I mean, he must have played, what, about 50 games for us now or something, all in all. Chris Wood, they paid £20 to £25 million for him within the last fortnight, and they're basically already just getting rid of him after two games.
Obviously, Simon saying we're being a bit harsh on Chris Wood. Look, I'm just saying how I see it. I mean,
just an opinion.
Exactly. I mean, if people see something in him, then that's fair enough as well. I'm only saying what I see on the pitch, guys, and I don't see a guy that's going to transform us. If Zapata comes in, then he takes Chris Wood's place. There is no doubt about it. You're not going to have a player like Zapata sitting on the bench, Alec.
No way. He will be first name on the team sheet. He is a cut above everybody we have now. Absolutely. Far, far better than Maxi. He's scored goals at the highest level, Champions League, Serie A. He's been doing it for several years. He is an absolute cut above. There is no way Wood gets anywhere near that starting 11 if Zapata comes in. So I don't know where Wood's going to fit in. If we do sign another striker, I don't know where Wood's going to play.
That's what they've arrived at as a club now, isn't it? Absolutely, just completely disposable players at all times.
I know we get frustrated with Bielsa sometimes saying, oh, whoever we sign needs to improve the first team. The lack of foresight for them to go, well, we'll try and buy a few players, and if the one we buy first, it's like we did with bloody David Livermore, and then we went, actually, Kevin Nichols was available, we'll get him, just get rid of that first one. And you wouldn't be at all surprising if Chris Wood does actually leave in summer. They'll sell him for like £8 million back to Burnley.
But then where's Zapata going to play when Mbappe signs?
That's very true. Very true.
You know, they can sign Zapata in January to keep them up, but he's not going to have a long shelf life. They're just spoiled brats, aren't they?
Which is why people want them to fail now, unfortunately, because that's just the way football is, isn't it? You see somebody else with, they've got unlimited wealth, they're not grateful for it. It's just like, I'll replace him, I want a better one. No, better one, better one. So you immediately wish ill upon them.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the way they are with the players. It's the sports watching side of it is a bizarre element to all this, because they are, I mean, I know social media is not a necessarily representative of everyone, but Christ, some of the legwork people are doing on social media to defend the Saudi regime, whether it's defending the fact it's not them, it's this investment thing, and that's completely separate, even though it's the exact same people, or to the point where people are saying, well, I saw someone trying to make the argument that you can't have a go at the Newcastle ownership because the British army have done bad things in the past elsewhere, like almost like criticizing the British Empire as a reason why Newcastle are allowed to have a Saudi owner. He's like, I don't think the British Empire ever owned a football club as such, did they? So it's not really the same. Yeah, and people say, oh, well, they are changing, actually. So it'd be bad. You can't criticise them while Saudi Arabia are changing. It's like, well, okay. But are they changing enough? Very strange.
Yeah. And then it will come to the conclusion when they'll say, but they don't own our club anyway. Mm. It's like, okay, so why are you spending so much time on social media defending a regime that doesn't even have anything to do, you don't think, with your football club?
Yeah. And like Eddie Howe said,
get a hobby.
Eddie Howe was even trotting out the line this week that their trip to Saudi Arabia is a football decision, wasn't it? Did you hear him say that this week? And it's like,
oh, come on.
I don't think even Heckingbottom had the balls to pretend that the trip to Myanmar was anything other than a daft fucking exercise in earning some brownie points or resigning, did he? It was like, well, looks like we're going to Myanmar. Brilliant.
If I go back, and this is from memory, but I'm pretty sure I'm right, Heckingbottom's quote on it was, it's not a football trip. It was one of the few times he said something of value that wasn't ball without ball. But yeah, it's we'll go there, play the games. Because people are saying, like, what can you get out of this from a football point of view? And it's like, nothing really. It's not a football trip. We're just going to play these games.
I got to admire his honesty. Actually, do you know what, Michael? You retweeted something to the effect of what you just said there about the whataboutery and the sports washing. And I was reading through the replies. And actually, the one reply that I respected most was, because it was the most honest, was, I don't give a shit. And that is a perfectly, it's a valid viewpoint, and it's honest.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. If your only concern with your club ownership is that they spend loads of money on players, that's a valid enough opinion, I think.
Anyway, this is a conversation for another day. Let's move it on to the clips anyway. Anyway.
Well, I mean, after we've had recent weeks, the people who are going to games in search of limbs, in search of, you know, the chaos, the carnage, that was it. This is someone called Adam Pearson, who's no relation to the Leeds United one, but he was instead doing live blogging from within the hospitality at Leeds.
Hey guys, this is the table I'm on. As you can see, we've got the wine and cheese. My Heineken bottle's down here. I mean, just look at that. I mean, you wouldn't see it at the castle. It's just an unbelievable experience. I'm going to enjoy these Heineken bottles because it was not cheap. But you're on the big time now, baby. That's the menu for today, guys. We've got salmon, sirloin. I mean, this is just heaven to me. I'm not really a dessert guy, but we've got chocolate tarts down there. I mean, I'll tell you what, that's a decent free course meal. There's my starter, the salmon. Looks very nice.
I mean, that almost makes up for the defeat, doesn't it, hearing these lads having a nice time? Christ. Wine and cheese, imagine that.
Has he ever actually been out?
Wine and cheese, you wouldn't get anything like this in your castle.
I love it trying to really make the most of the Heineken. As if that's come from the depth of the cellar, Alan Rowe. Sir, we understand you've come all the way from Newcastle today. We have a finest Heineken for you.
I've been to Sainsbury's at Team Valley in Gateshead. It's got cheese and wine. What's he on about?
Does it have Heineken, though?
Well, I don't know, something as exotic as that. Well, let's just bin off the Newcastle ones because we don't need to hear people having a nice time now, do we? Should we move on to the wider world of propaganda and find out what's going on elsewhere?
A bit more of entitlement. That's what people come to this for. So,
of course, yeah.
Man City, you saw, had a disgraceful result at the weekend. They drew a game, didn't they, having won...
Pathetic.
Having won every game for since the beginning of time. So they were obviously laying into the ref. This is City Extra. You might remember these guys are the ones who were wanted to be sick in a bin about the Lim Cooper injury. But the entitlement here spreads to the fact that Man City should only have the best refs doing their game.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, are they giving them the standard refs and not the premium ones?
Basically, yeah. They've been given someone that thinks that every game that Man City play should have a ref of their choosing and the very best in the world.
Like the way the referee was going about the game, he just looked to me like he just didn't have control or like he didn't know what he was doing. I just checked his stats, yeah. This guy refs about 10 games in the Premier League every year. 10. He's not a proper Premier League referee. He's like in the middle of the Championship and the Premier League. Like, he's just a spare man. Like, I'm not being funny. I don't mean to be like rude to the guy and that, but like, this is a Premier League. Like, the Premier League needs to get a grip on this, or the FA, whoever's in charge of these referees, needs to get a grip. You know what I mean? You can't just be having some random Donny who's refereeing 10 matches a season referee a crucial game. And some people are like, it's not crucial. We're in a title race. Referee that City get, any referee that Liverpool get, needs to be like the best, regardless of who we're playing, whether we're playing Norwich at the bottom of the table or whether it's Liverpool versus City. It needs to be like the best referees because this costs stuff, man.
Who was it?
I don't even know. But it's fine. It's fine for him to referee 10 games a season, just not Man City games. Because their ones are important.
They got a little ref, didn't they? And I think the legendary fixture of Southampton versus Manchester City.
Oh, it's a massive game.
Needs more respect. I'm just looking through for a historical example. So 1994, Manchester City represented by the likes of Andy Dibble in goal, Ian Brightwell, Keith Curl, Andy Hill, Michelle Vonk, David Brightwell, Peter Beagrie, Steve McMahon, David Rocastle, God rest his soul, Uwe Rosler, Chiellino's friend, and Paul Walsh, bringing on Mike Sheeran and Stefan Kahle. That's, Martin Margitson was the unused goalkeeper. That's the kind of respect.
Prestige, Moscow.
It's the heritage that this kind of refereeing appointment is just not respecting. You know, Francis Benali was playing for Southampton that day. Ken Moncal, these players deserve... for the memories of their contribution. Nicky Banger coming on, and you had to pronounce
banger,
it Banger.
He's a banger.
Even though his name was clearly Nicky Banger. Anyway, it's an absolute insult to what these players say.
We need to have better refs for City. This is City, isn't it? They're that close. They are that close.
This is Manchester
this
United.
Is United. Manchester United.
It's Manchester United Football Club. Manchester United Football Club can't be having this.
They had Brian Hill that day in 4th of April 1994, and wherever Brian Hill is now, they should bring him back.
Well, part of the reason they were upset was because they thought there should have been a red card for a foul on Aymeric Laporte, which he tweeted a picture of his injury. I've included it here on the sheets for you to have a look at. It's a scratch, isn't it?
Gash. Bit of a gash.
It's pretty bad, but this was not a red card.
No, and it was like, you say it's that bad. It's not that bad. It's like it's somewhere between the scratch that Silvestri had on his back. It's like that for the majority of it, and then there's a little bit of a cut. But I think it's fresh after the game. This? I don't think it's that bad. He's got very skinny leg as Laporte. I was actually quite surprised.
I'm glad it's not happened to my leg.
Hmm.
But I think he'll be okay. And the tackle, the challenge was, there wasn't any like force in it. I think it was long, and he just left his boot as he was going for a 50-50 ball and nicked him, and it wasn't anything bad. He got a yellow card, it's fine.
To listen to him describe it, you would think that his leg was being carried off the pitch in 8 or 9 pieces.
With Laporte, I mean, you've all seen the photos of Laporte's leg.
Yeah.
It's torn apart, bro. The guy's going to need stitches. He's going to need everything on that. You know what I mean? He's going to need the best medical care he can give him. It's just absolutely ridiculous. You know what I mean? I'm on the FA website here, bro. Yeah, about the about sending offs and that. He's saying, look, sending off offences, serious foul play is a sending off. That is a sending off. It just is a sending off. I just don't understand it. I don't get it. Violent conduct. It's not violent, but it's serious foul. That's a serious foul play. Laporte's leg doesn't end up in the blender like it has if it's not serious foul.
The blender.
He's looked at the rules and it even says something about serious foul play, and that just is a red card.
It's really cutting analysis. But yeah, he's going to need the best medical care we can give him. As if he's like had a Christian Eriksen incident. It's like he's come within. His life has absolutely flashed before his eyes at this incident. He's very lucky to be walking. Never mind playing football.
I think that kid should be reffing Manchester City's game, shouldn't he? With a grasp of the rules like that.
I did go back to, because part of the complaint was about a John Stones one where he was sent off for what was definitely a worse tackle, actually, if you're looking at him side by side. And his assessment of that, when he watched it, he went, oh, that's not great, but nah, it's a yellow card. And he's thinking like, whereas he thinks that this has been in a blender, his leg, and he thought that the Liam Cooper tackle made him want to be sick in a bin. It's worth looking up. Laporte tweeted this picture, and it's worth having a look at it just to see the extent of the injury, because genuinely not that bad.
Well, we'll put it onto the video version of this, and people can see whether or not, maybe with a graphic 18 certificate, graphic warning for a bit of a cut on the leg, something like that.
Simon Hooper was the referee, by the way.
I've heard of him. He's fine.
He's not, but fine is not good enough for Manchester City. They're a premium football club. They should have a premium ref.
That's very true.
Twats. Right, go on then, Michael. What's next?
Got a bit of poetry to bring you now for the to end the podcast on. It's a Derby fan, Ben F. Marg. He is on Twitter, and he's obviously got his GCSE drama as well as his GCSE English, and he's done a very moving performance of this. It's worth trying to see the video for it, because the level of acting in it is just toe-curlingly awful. But here you go. See if it brings any tears.
Do we want to play out the show on this, like not come back in afterwards? Because I think this might be so moving that we're never going to top it.
It depends if we want to make fun of it some more.
Okay, fine. Let's hear it.
This city needs Derby County, and now it's on life support. Mel Morris, the liar, now administrators. We're begging desperately to be bought. Save our club. We're crying. Football can't let this be. Weeks away from folding, that is an abomination to me. It's us fans that pay the price for one selfish, disgusting figure. One that convinced us we had the EFL on strings, and now each day, sorry news is delivered. It's the uncertainty that's killing us. And for those who just couldn't care less, Gibson and Coig begging for a few quid. Can't you see this city is depressed, hopelessly looking for answers in statements written blunt and cold? Tell me who stands by and laughs while club and livelihoods fold. Thank you, Wayne, and all the players and all the staff behind the scenes. Because you've made us believe that despite all this, somewhere there's a dream. I don't know what's going to happen, and I doubt that anyone does.
I do.
Whatever happens, we're together. We're black and white forever. So please, save our club.
Is it all right if I don't? I don't want it.
It's the uncertainty that's killing him. That's not actually true. It's the mountain of debt and rules that they've broken and the two pending court cases.
And you know what's killing all the small businesses that rely on Derby County? Them going into admin and not paying them any of the debts that they're owed. I don't think you can pin that on Steve Gibson or Wickham, who's also had a hit to their economy because they were relegated from the Championship unfairly. And so they lost out on the visits from teams that they were playing at that level who pumped money into local businesses there. So if I'm going to save a club, I'll save Wickham. Got a nicer kit, and that's enough.
I did learn something, though. It says Derby's a city. I kind of always thought it was a town.
It's a really depressing city. I once got caught on the inner ring road in Derby. If you think Leeds is bad to drive around, then this was choking. I was trying to get somewhere, and every time I came off a junction on the inner ring road, I was just in another wasteland, no nearer to where I was trying to be. This is pre-sat-nav, and honestly, I spent an hour trying to get back to where I'd dropped some people off. I said, I'll just drop the car in the car park, and I'll come back to this gig that we were going. And it took me an hour to try and get back. And then I think it was the morning after that I backed my car into, you remember my Peugeot?
I do, yeah.
You know, it had a big dent in the rear passenger door, that Derby. It was a pillar in Derby. So for those reasons, I think that's more than enough to send the place, to send the football club bust. And, you know, send the poem to Mel Morris. It's not our fault. And also, like, at least 75% of that poem was just, we're really stupid.
Can you please let us off?
Yeah, it's like Mel Morris convinced us that he had the EFL on strings. Yeah, everybody else saw that he was talking absolute bollocks. Don't read a sad poem that basically is just, you know, how many different ways can I think of rhyming? I'm an idiot. Solve my problems for me.
I did get excited when he used the word blunt at the end of a line. I thought, where's this going? I will say, Moscow, your memories of that Peugeot, very, very poignant and a perfect place to leave it, a place of high emotion.
Save our Peugeot.
And that Peugeot, quite fittingly, has been crushed and scrapped now, a bit like Derby County.
Yeah, I read a poem over it as it was wheeled away from me. It was better than that.
And that does wrap up this episode of Propaganda. We're back after the Villa game with more of that. And let's just hope we win, because we don't need to be subjected to that accent goading us in the wake of another defeat. So
I don't know whether you're talking about Brummies or Steven Gerrard at this point.
Oh God, double whammy, yeah. Right, we'll be back for that. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.